Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, time to take a look at macroeconomics and most importantly, how they influence the political agenda or are influenced by it and subsequently see their way translating into monetary policies. Sounds like I've said a whole bunch of technical things, but essentially, who runs a country and is entrusted with it does play an influence in terms of their policies, their planning, their structure, and the people they appoint to help run and lead that economy and the impact it has on our pockets. So for this conversation, we're joined by Isaiah Mhlanga, Chief Economist at RMB, a good friend of the show, but also someone who will help us understand the various nuances we're seeing in different parts of the world. When you think about the US, the upcoming elections and the politics there will fundamentally play an influence on what we are seeing when it comes to monetary policy and the economic stance. Argentina, a country as well that has been plagued by weak and subsequent economic calamities, really, still seeing what should have been a change in leadership, but being announced as though it's not the case. And of course, Japan, also a key market, which has taken a very different approach to its monetary policy in comparison to its peers. So we thought that we'd just pick up on a few of these economies to really understand how things are different and divergent at times in the global economy. Mr. Mhlanga, always a pleasure to speak to you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Good to speak with you.
Thank you. I must say, Isaiah, when I spoke to my colleague and producer of the show, Sinen Jabula, about this conversation today, I sat back and I thought, this is one of those that you need to have like a 3-hour long lunch or dinner party to discuss.
Indeed. It's quite complex, given that it's politics. It's not, you know, the usual economics that we speak about. There are many dynamics to consider.
100%. And maybe perhaps let's start off with a market that many of us don't typically consider, Japan. Just earlier this week, we had an understanding that the world take a stance on their interest rates and their MPC as positioning is very different. And what caught my attention when I was sharing this with a few colleagues is that they all thought it's a very peculiar view that Japan wants to increase interest rates to at least 0.5% or 1%, given the low inflation that they've been battling with. And it sounded completely different to the reality that we face in South Africa. But there's a long history to this regarding Abenomics, quantitative easing, and many other concepts that were implemented in that economy in the past.
Indeed, Japan has an aging population, which means it struggles with creating inflation. It did so for quite some time, where their inflation was close to zero, in most cases in deflation, and that typically hurts economies. But when the COVID pandemic hit, we had all the supply chain pressures that we also experienced pushing Japanese inflation weaker. But I think the anchor that is usually driving or influencing Japan's economic performance, particularly on an inflation perspective and the yen, is the U.S. monetary policy. So to the extent that the U.S. Fed was previously expected to cut rates 6 times this year, at the beginning of this year, and that it subsequently changed, markets are less than 3 cuts now. There has been an influence in terms of the performance of the Japanese yen. It has been weakening, and that weakness has been driving Japanese inflation higher, which is why they are talking of potentially even raising rates when the U.S. Fed is now gearing up to cut rates. The ECB has been cutting rates. The Bank of Canada has been cutting rates. So if you look across the major economies, they are already cutting rates or close to cutting rates. While Japan, because of the weakness of the yen and therefore the upside risk to inflation, they are thinking of potentially hiking rates. So it shows you how the different dynamics play out at individual country levels. We are not seeing a synchronized cutting of interest rates across the world.
Yeah. Very true. I also took the liberty of explaining to a colleague of mine that the currency valuations between the yen as well as the rand perhaps are slightly different and more within our favor as South Africans to consider as a market to actually visit. Help us contextualize that.
No, indeed, I think if you just look in terms of the strength of the different currencies, to a large extent, it's driven by productivity. But if you look at those productivity measures between South Africa and Japan, Japan has a better productivity. They are technologically advanced. They are one of the largest economies in the world. And so they tend to do better. But in relative terms, you know, if you just look in terms of how many rands you need to buy US dollars relative to how many Japanese yen you need to buy US dollars, you can mistaken that to say the Japanese yen is much weaker than the South African rand, but that's not the case. What really matters is productivity. That's what really determines the competitiveness of an economy.
Got you. So whilst we want to boost the productivity we have in South Africa to match that of Japan, we certainly are not taking away or looking to follow through in their footsteps with regard to disinflation and the weaknesses there. Japan is one market. Argentina is another, and perhaps an example of what it is we need to avoid.
Absolutely. Argentina has a history of debt defaults, essentially where the government borrows money from the market and eventually says, hang on, we can't pay you back, and therefore we want to restructure your debt. You're not going to get your money as we promised, but we will pay at a future date to be determined. Sometimes we actually don't pay in full. So they have that history over many years before, and as a result, you tend to see their currency depreciating significantly. Their inflation, much more recently, just before the elections, they were close to 25%. The incoming government was very clear in terms of the policies which they wanted. They wanted to stabilize the currency, and therefore they hiked interest rates aggressively, and inflation indeed came down to about 4.6%. Which is a good low inflation that reduces the cost of living and therefore provides a relief to its population. But the flip side of it is the high interest rates that were implemented to bring the inflation down increases the cost of debt servicing costs across the economy, inclusive of consumers, and that hurt consumers. So it's almost like because they let the sickness of the economy for too long, the type of medicine they need to administer is painful and bitter initially, but over time it should provide the relief to the economy to make it investable but also stable over time.
Sure. I find this so intriguing because we also know that the change in power there in terms of how it's been received has also come with its own backlog and some challenges. President Javier Milei not only claiming presidency, but of course announcing economic reforms that is the medicine you're alluding to. How does this, I guess, differ from the previous administration's policies, and will it be worthwhile?
Look, it's quite different. The current president understands the economics, hence the suggestion of orthodox policies, because some of the creative policies that have been implemented over many years have not yet worked. So this is an alternative, or you could say this is a different approach to implementing policies within that particular country, hence the concerted effort to drive inflation to low levels, which required the central bank to hike rates quite aggressively, even at the expense of, bringing the economy into a recession. It's necessary sometimes, which is why it's important to make sure that macroeconomic management is done appropriately. You don't let the economy get into, imbalances for too long, because the policy response that will be required become too aggressive. So once you see an imbalance, you administer the right policies, to bring it back into balance. But if you don't for too long, it means you might actually need to perform surgery, no longer just giving it medicine.
And then let's close off by taking a look at Kenya. Again, another economy that's been struggling, highly indebted, look to implement tax reforms, massive public protest, and now changes to its administration. But of course, this still weighs heavy on how the books need to balance and how the budget nationally does need to be deployed. How should we be interpreting this as South Africans?
Look, I think Kenya also gives us some lessons. The fiscal deficits have been high, their ability to collect tax revenues have been limited, and on the other end, government spending has been growing largely on social spending, which has little benefit in terms of actually boosting economic growth, because there is a high import content. If you're producing what you consume, you can say you can boost economic growth by spending more. But if you're importing, it means you're just taking money, buying and improving growth in other economies that sell their products to you. So the, you know, the policy proposals to generate a little bit of tax revenues was not received appropriately, you know, by Kenyans. You could almost liken it to our own e-tolls here, when, you know, there was civil disobedience, the refusal to pay. So generally, a tax must be acceptable by the population that pays that tax. Mm-hmm. And if you have a government that spends, funds in a bad way, perhaps including corruption and all of those things, it loses the support of the population. So you tend to see civil disobedience against taxes which the population feels is potentially not warranted, given how the use of those funds are, you know, are administered. So that's, in essence, what you see in Kenya. Some of the tax proposals that were put on the table, the population there just felt perhaps they were unfair and unwarranted, putting an extra burden on their cost of living, and therefore they revolted against them.
The biggest takeaway for me for this conversation is, which I'm hoping many of our listeners will understand, is that I guess when it comes to analyzing economies, there's no better than or worse or for, comparison. Yes, some of them might be fair and justified, but it is important to understand that there's certain nuances and details that will always differ when it comes to economies and the economic outcomes. And I guess that's essentially the hope that I was looking to drive with this conversation today. And I guess it gives us something different to appreciate when it comes to understanding our own economics in the country.
Absolutely, particularly in the broader Africa. It's a diverse continent. There's a lot of opportunities, but also lots of risks. No two economies are the same, which means you actually have to look at a granular level at the drivers of the economy and what really, you know, culture that also drives, you know, certain economic activities. All of those things combined, they determine how an economy behaves. And within the broader Africa space, so many economies have so many differences across so many dimensions, such that we need to lift the lid and really look at a granular level than just to take the top line numbers of economic growth alone.
Definitely. All the more reason to have a long 3-hour lunch and debate these themes and topics. Thank you so much again, Issa. Really appreciate your
Always
time.
Always a pleasure.
Fantastic. That's Azaim Khlanga, who joins us as Chief Economist at RMB, helping us just put into context. You know, whenever we say things are tough in South Africa, the economy is a mess, it's a quagmire. It's a quagmire in terms of our perspective and our reality and our lived experience. But when you really take the few steps back, compare us to the global economy, understand the different nuances of different countries, economies, the culture, the politics, the policies, then you have a refreshing perspective to understand that, hold on, we could be actually challenged by a completely different set of problems, but thankfully not challenged by them, as they do come with their own consequences. Whether it's Japan, whether it's Kenya, or even Argentina, all economies and peers when it comes to trading and economic activity that we compete and collaborate with, but each with a different and unique set of challenges. So that's an economic update just for us to get a refreshing perspective on how the rest of the world is coping with its struggles.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.